teaching, convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. For those of you who have been listening to the program all week long, you know that we have been devoting every program this week to the upcoming election for the Racine Unified School District School Board. And each day of the week, we have featured a different pair of candidates vying for a spot on the Racine Unified School District School Board. And by the way, some of the candidates have also been heard in Dwayne Olson's editions of Education Matters on the weekend. And you can go to our website, WGTD.org, and seek out those interviews in the archive or the morning show interviews that have already aired this week that you might have missed. Again, on today's program, which is my last of four interviews with school board candidates, I'm pleased to be speaking with the two candidates for the 5th district in the Racine Unified School District, Chuck Goodremote and Steve Hooper. And we will be asking them an array of questions, very similar to the questions posed to the candidates who have appeared on the morning show earlier this week. So first of all, Chuck Remote, Steve Hooper, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here. I'm glad we can have a conversation about this really, really important topic. We're going to begin by giving each of you a chance to introduce yourself to our listeners, maybe tell them a bit about who you are, where you come from, maybe what you do for a living. And certainly we want to also know a little bit about what sort of galvanizes your interest in public education and being part of the Racine Unified School District. And as we've done in the past, we'll begin alphabetically with Chuck Goodremote.
So again, my name is Chuck Goodremote. I moved here from northern Wisconsin a little more than 34 years ago. Most of my time in the area has been in Mount Pleasant. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Stout. I started as an entry-level engineer at Modine Manufacturing in 1982 at the age of 22. I've only ever worked for Modine, although I've worked in many different positions. As I mentioned, I started out as an entry-level engineer. My education prepared me pretty well. I advanced through the ranks. I started at entry-level, moved on to supervisor, manager, and even director of global research and engineering for the entire company. During this time, I also got married, started raising a family, and went back to school at night at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. I received my MBA from Parkside in 1995. And really, my MBA positioned me for another phase of my career, and that would be in the executive ranks of the company. I've been a general manager for one of our divisions in Kentucky. I've been a managing director of our automotive division in Europe. I'm currently the chief information officer of the company. As chief information officer, my primary responsibility is helping to develop corporate strategy. And as that corporate strategy is developed, then it's also my responsibility to implement that strategy. And I do that with my team, hopefully in cost-effective ways, primarily through the setting of policies and procedures. I believe that each step in life prepares us for the next. Education prepares us for career success, and hopefully if we're successful in our careers, it prepares us for community success or an opportunity to give back to our community. And indeed, I am giving back. I'm on a number of local boards, a number of academic boards, and a number of faith-based boards. One of the academic boards that I'm on is the advisory board to the dean of the College of Business Economics and Computing at UW-Parkside. I'm also on the Racine Vocational Ministries Board. I am indeed a product of public education. I owe my success to the Wisconsin educational system. And my greatest desire is that every RUSD student be given the same opportunity to succeed that this great state gave me. Thank you.
That was Chuck Goodremote, and now we turn to our other candidate here in the 5th District, Steve Hooper.
Thank you. Once again, I'm Steve Hooper, and I'm from Racine. I was born in Racine. I attended public schools my entire life in Racine and graduated from UW Parkside in 2002 with a biology degree. After that, I went into a bit of management. I was running two franchises of the Two Men in a Truck Moving Company, both here in Racine. We had Racine Kenosha, and then in Pewaukee as well at the same time. So, and after that, I was hired by SC Johnson, where I currently am in research and development in product development. I have three children currently in the unified system. They're all in elementary school right now, so we have at least, the next decade or so that I'm counting on Racine Unified School Districts for my kids, and not to mention wanting to see that it's viable long into the future for their kids and beyond. That's my drive behind this is I'm running as a parent. I like the idea of a board that has a wide variety of voices, business voices, political voices, and one big one for me. My drive is the parental voice, and that's where I come in. I want to see the decisions that I would make while being on the board. I just think they're going to come down to what's the best for my kids. What would I see for my kids, which would be good for the entire school district, just as a whole. So, I also my wife is also a teacher in Racine Unified, as a family, we have obviously a lot of stake in the school district, and just love to see that it continues to grow, continues to be great, and we need to get that public opinion back of its greatness. So that's where I'm at.
Steve Hooper. Now we want to pose a series of questions to both of you, and Steve Hooper, we'll begin with you. In these kind of candidate forums, we typically spend most of our time weeping and wailing about one problem after another assailing public education. And, of course, those problems do need to be talked about, and we'll spend plenty of time on that. But we're going to begin today by asking you and Mr. Goodremote as well to talk about at least one success story, something that you think is a positive aspect of the Racine Unified School District that you think merits praise, celebration, acknowledgement.
Okay. I think right off the bat, the idea of these academies coming into Racine is fantastic. I'm like I said, my kids are young in the school system, so I'm kind of just getting really involved now. But the idea of a high school program that drives kids to have a path beyond just high school, to the idea that they are going to have a life outside of high school when it's done, that's a great thing, and it's great that it's being implemented, and I think, like I said, just the fact that that's even there for us and there for them and coming up is fantastic. Now, I know we're probably going to get into it. How it's being rolled out is one of the back and forth factors. But the great thing is that there's this program getting put in place for the kids to be able to look into the future.
That was Steve Hooper. Now Chuck Goodremote, same question to you.
Thank you. Well, clearly I think that educational performance is improving. We see that as evidenced by some of the published metrics that track graduation rates. Graduation rates have improved in Racine more than most other schools in the state. And reading rates and math scores have also improved significantly. The thing that I appreciate most is the focused efforts of administration to collaborate with our teachers and the business community. And our post-secondary education institutions and our community as a whole as we plan for the academies of Racine. I think we need more of this fresh thinking, and that we must make every effort not to slow things down. All of the community must continue to find ways to pull together. You'll find a common theme with me. I think that teamwork is very, very important. And I know through significant business experience, if you get smart people pulling in the same direction, great things can happen. Thank you.
One of the predominant themes in public education, not only here in Racine and here in Wisconsin, but across the country, is much more focus on standardized test scores as the primary means by which success is gauged. How much a given student is succeeding, how much a given school is succeeding, how much a given school district is succeeding. A lot rises and falls on these test scores. I want to hear from each of you how comfortable you are with this focus on test scores. Do you think it's a healthy thing in terms of our educational system? Should we be depending on those kind of numbers, or are we depending on them too much? Do they only tell part of the story of what education is about and how well a given person is being educated, and or are they being utilized in ways that might perhaps be counterproductive? I mean, do you like the system as it is, or would you somehow tweak that? Mr. Goodremote.
I think measurement is very important. But measuring things correctly, that's always the million-dollar question. I think a great man, I think Edward Deming, I think, was the man that said this. He said, if you don't measure something, you don't improve that thing. So measurement is very important because you have to have a baseline such that you can tell if you're improving or not. Now, the trick is always the quality of that measurement. How well are we measuring what it is that we want to improve on? So I think the concept of standardized scores are actually good, but do we have the correct standardized tests? I believe in theory, if we use continuous improvement and continue to improve the standardized test, and then we're able to measure ourselves against the expected learning, I think that standardized testing can be very good. Now, I will say that right now, we probably have a long ways to go, because what I've heard is that sometimes we have teachers that teach to the test. Now, teaching to the test is probably wrong, although it might also highlight something. You know, why isn't the curriculum that we have preparing children to perform to the expectations that we set for ourselves? And I'll end with that question for everybody to think about.
Mr. Hooper.
Okay. Well, as far as it goes, I have obviously we need to measure. I'm absolutely in agreement. We need a measurement. And, you know, I don't know if that's one standardized test a year, if that's the answer for it, because there has to be a standard across the board or you can't get a good measure. However, from personal experience, when I watch a 10-year-old not sleep for the entire night because he's so stressed out planning for a test that's coming up, that's that turns me off to the idea of how much pressure is put on some of these kids at a very young age to be able to perform those tests. And so there's ups and downs. I think there's too much testing right now. But there absolutely has to be a measure. And do we have the answers right here, right now? Absolutely not. The discussions need to happen. And it needs to be brought to light what this does to the students, not only, as Chuck said, too, just teaching to a test. You lose the magic and the fun of elementary school in that respect, too. And I speak from elementary school because all three of my kids are currently in elementary school, so that's the viewpoint I get from it. But But there was, I remember elementary school for us being, you know, there was a test at some point, but the rest of the time it was fun teachers, fun topics, and along the way, we didn't realize it, but we were learning. So, you know, teaching to the test is not going to be a good answer for that either. So that's...
You've both mentioned the academy model, which is soon to be implemented in Racine Unified in the high schools. And, of course, part of the whole purpose of that is the idea of helping students to sort out what their career goals might be and to help prepare them for the world of work that awaits them after graduation. And this is, of course, also a predominant trend in public education across the country, more and more focus on vocational training, on helping students, presumably at an earlier and earlier age, to start thinking about what kind of career they might be interested in and really preparing them to embark on that career path. I wonder if you are fully comfortable with that focus. Do you think education needs to be predominantly about that, or do you see any problem with that? I mean, does that perhaps negate or crowd out other aspects of being a well-educated person that does not necessarily have specifically to do with training you for a particular job? What is your own personal comfort level with our focus on career preparation in public education, especially as that's being lived out in Racine Unified?
This
is Steve Hooper.
I'm sorry. I think it's absolutely important that the students in at the high school level have a drive for what's next. I think you've got kids who the end game is graduation of high school, and that there has to be a focus beyond. Do they need to pick their career in high school? Not necessarily, but this the idea that this gives them different options for paths to take, also in a setting that's a lot more like secondary education. You know, when we talk about it being set up as block scheduling, you're going to have more theory plus hands-on in the same larger time frame, like you would have in a college course or in a technical course outside of high school. But absolutely, I think at that age, students really need to. I think it's going to help the community when students coming out of high school already have a path in mind and they're already walking down it.
Hmm. Mr. Goodremote.
You know, I think as we embarked on the academy's concept, we had Ford Next Generation Learning come in and share this concept with us. And I didn't, but many others visited different communities that have incorporated this concept. And in Nashville, especially, as I understand it, this academy's concept actually turned around their education system. You know, I think engagement is what causes people that are disinterested in things to put more effort in. And I think if you can see where you're going rather than just walking around, you know, remember those math tests that you had or those math classes you had, and you'd raise your hand and say, why are we learning this? And sometimes the teacher would have a hard time explaining that, of course. As an engineer, I learned why we were doing many of those things. And actually, in my own life, as I started to gain focus on why I needed to learn these things and what it could do for my life, it caused me to engage in the educational process. And I think this concept gives more children the opportunity to engage. Hopefully it'll spark something that's in there that they didn't even know was there. And we expose them to different career pathways, and they light up. Hmm. That's what I hope happens with the academies. You know, something also important, though, it's I don't think it's like that we're just setting things up so that the kids are only going to be focusing on manual careers, if you will. We're still, and we've stated this, we want to prepare children for college, too. Those that want to move on to college, there are pathways to indeed do that also. So I think it'll help students see a reason for school. That'll make a difference. The other thing that's going to be very, very, very good, I think, is that we will engage with local business. And there's going to be engagement with universities and even technical schools. And most importantly, it'll provide, hopefully, more engagement with the community. So I think focus and purpose, hopefully, is the result of the academies.
For those of you just joining us, this portion of the morning show is being spent with the two candidates for the Racine Unified School District School Board, the 5th District. So we are speaking with Chuck Goodremote and Steve Hooper and posing to them a number of different questions related to public education in general and specifically as that's playing out in the Racine Unified School District. As already has been mentioned by both of you, couched in this model of the academies in the high school would be a shift over to what is called block scheduling, which in a sense reshapes the school day into longer periods. And this is nothing new and certainly nothing unique to the Racine Unified School District. Block scheduling has been implemented all across the country. It has certainly generated some difference of opinion amongst both students and teachers, and it has its fans and it has its detractors. In principle, and also in the specific model of the Racine Unified School District, are you a fan of block scheduling? Do you see it as a worthwhile tool, or do you see it as a model which has some kind of inherent problems or potential problems that that need to be addressed? Mr. Goodremote.
Yeah. You know, first of all, what is block scheduling? Right now, we have 8 periods that are approximately 50 minutes long. Block scheduling will go to 4 periods during the day, and then you'll have classes every other day. So if you go through the cycle of 2 days, you'll go through about the same amount of curriculum. Now, I actually think much ado about not so much here. Scheduling has its pros and cons. I think any of us that have went to college, we've had shorter classes and we've had longer classes, and we've seen our teachers prepare for the shorter classes and the longer classes. So again, I think there's a bit ado about not so much, because I think what we'll see is that we have approximately the same or similar curriculum. Just a different length class that meets every other day. But I think in our case, especially with the academies, our mentors from Nashville actually suggested block scheduling as a prerequisite. So it's highly recommended for the success of the academies. I think on just the practical side, I like the idea of less transition time between classes. You know, us human beings are not very good multitaskers. One of the biggest problems we have as human beings is switching from one task to another. And I kind of like the idea of children and kids, young people, spending less time in the hallway between classes. I think that you'll have more opportunity to get focused, more opportunity to get deeper into the subject matter. And even more importantly, it'll be very conducive to getting the community engaged because it'll be more conducive to internships. So if you have a longer class period at the end of the day, it gives more opportunity at that end of the day for the young people to get engaged with local businesses. So for us, to me, it doesn't seem to make that much difference whether it's twice the curriculum in a longer period of time or if it's cut in half in a shorter period of time. But I think in our particular situation, this is a very good thing.
Mr. Hooper.
I personally also see the benefits of block scheduling. I have family members who in their high school careers were in block scheduling. They loved it. When I was in Racine, I didn't have it, and I knew that they did. And I kind of wished I did. I would have gone for that. So, 4 classes a day that you have to focus on as opposed to 7 or 8, just that's a no-brainer for, you know, a 14 to 18 year old. You know, like I said, I would have taken that in a heartbeat. But I have talked to some people out there that have come to me with some of their concerns, and you know, one of them being the arts. There's concern with the arts that kids who play instruments at school, where that's their only opportunity to do that because of possibly outside of commitments or other things, they're only going to be down to being able to do those activities once every other day, maybe for a longer period of time. But there's concern there from them, and that's definitely a valid concern. So they want to be able to keep those elective type things available to them, and some of those students might be looking into those arts as a career too. So that needs to be a viable option for them. So there's definitely ups and downs, but I really do like the idea, like Chuck said, of just less transition in a day. That's got to be so much easier to handle when you have, you know, 3 to 4 subjects worth of homework in a night rather than 7 or, you know, or more. That's hopefully going to be a lot easier for them to handle at that age group. Also, the idea that you have a 90-minute period that you can have theory and then hands-on work to support that theory really supports differentiated learning. Not everybody learns out of a book, you know, and when you can combine those things, that could possibly boost it forward real well for some of them. Now, of course, there's also you know, the other big concern is that it's just the staff who's going to be implementing it is just really concerned that they're going to be ready. That's really what it comes down to, and that's where a lot of the headbutting has been coming into play. I don't know if there's future questions about that. I might leave that out of there right now, but in support of it, yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I'm not following up real specifically, although okay. Maybe this next question can you might draw that in if you like. One of my understandings about the model as it is presumed to be implemented is that each teacher in the high schools will end up actually with one more class of students that they are responsible for. So one more class of 25 or more students that they will be teaching and evaluating and grading and all of the responsibilities that go on with that. And my understanding is that there are at least some teachers who, given that reality, of that will not only be just a reshaping of what they already do, but they'll be also teaching yet another group of students under this new system, that at least some teachers are looking very much at the possibility of scaling back some of what they do outside of the school day in terms of being involved in extracurricular activities and maybe facilitating some of those extracurricular activities in light of this added responsibility that is going to be part of this new reality. First of all, is that your understanding of how this block scheduling is going to operate, that it has this consequence? And further, if in fact that is the reality and that certain teachers may make different choices for themselves, which may affect the availability of certain extracurricular activities, what is your own particular concern about that? Do you see that as something significant that needs to be addressed, or is that not nearly as important as some of the gains that you see as being part of this this new block scheduling system?
Okay.
Mr. Hooper.
Well, like you said, I think I will draw that back right in here right now, because I think this is why it becomes important to bring the teachers and staff that are going to be implementing this into the fold as it's decided how it rolls out. I'm not completely 100% familiar with how it's exactly going to be scheduled right at this time. So I'm just projecting if I say anything about it. But that's why I would look personally to the professionals who are already out there to say, how is this going to work? We already know block scheduling is coming. We know the academies are here. And that's all been said. So let's get together with the people who are going to be doing it and make sure that we have their input, which is based on their daily, you know, what they do on a day-to-day basis, and really make a good joint decision to make this the best program that it can possibly be for the students who are going to engage in it. We know the first year is going to have hiccups. You know, first, second, third year, who knows? And it should get better every year. But let's make it as good as we possibly can right off the bat by giving the proper time and the proper voices to it.
Hmm. Mr. Goodremote.
Well, being an engineer by training and I guess also a business guy, educated by public education in Wisconsin, let me share a little bit of math with us. I asked this question to Lolly Hawes to get kind of some perspective on the changes. Right now, as I understand it, the average teacher in Racine Unified teaches five classes, unless they perform overloads, and then they would teach six. But so let's just use simple math, and we'll round a little bit. If each class period is 50 minutes currently, and they teach five classes, 5 times 50 is 250 minutes during the day that's taught right now. So right now, teachers, unless they do overload, are teaching at 250 minutes a day. If we move to block scheduling, or when we move to block scheduling, the classes are approximately 90 minutes long, and there are three classes. 3 times 90 is 270. So the average teacher would be teaching approximately 20 minutes more per day. But a fact that I didn't know or that I didn't understand is that the average teacher in Wisconsin actually teaches six classes. So the average Wisconsin teacher, 6 times 50 is 300. The average teacher in Wisconsin has a class load of six. 6 times 50 is 300. So average teacher in Wisconsin teaches 300 minutes a day. In Racine, we teach 250. Block scheduling will take us to 270. So indeed, it will be a change. But will it be a needed change? I know what's so important is that we figure out a way to make class size smaller. And will this extra time allow us to make class size smaller without increased budgetary impact? And we know as a school district, we don't really control the amount of revenue. We have revenue caps, so we only have so much money to work with. So I think that this might be a very clever way for us to come together and give more back to our community and actually help the educational system.
One of the realities that Racine Unified is contending with as it's public school districts across the state is this new reality of vouchers, which of course is leading more and more parents to opt for this option by which they end up enrolling their children in private and or parochial schools rather than their own public school. And of course, I think it's well known the ramifications that at least in general has had on a school district like Racine Unified. My question to each of you is, what is your own personal level of satisfaction with this voucher system as it was conceived and as it is being implemented in the state of Wisconsin? And were it in your power to alter that voucher system in any way, what would you do? Would you do away with it? Would you limit it? Would you expand it? Or would you maintain it exactly as it is because you think it's a good system that should be maintained? Mr. Goodremote.
I have to be right up front with this. I don't like vouchers. The math doesn't work very well if you think about it. If we take taxpayer money and take the voucher and give it to private schools, there's still a fixed cost that exists in the private or in the public schools. So that fixed cost doesn't just go away. So the math is quite simple. Absolutely, positively, for sure, the cost goes up if you go with vouchers. I think a more important thing, though, is why on earth are vouchers even coming up? You know, why can't we make our public schools the education of choice? The real problem is that when parents given the opportunity, and most voucher parents still have to take some money out of their own pocket, they will opt to take that money, yes, but then they will send their kids to private schools. And that's the thing that we really have to take a look at. What is causing that to happen, that people want to flee the public schools? Now, I think if the legislature were clever, it would take that extra money that it costs us and put extra time in helping the public schools become the schools of choice.
Mr. Hooper.
I'm going to agree with you 100% on that. I don't like vouchers. I mean, if there's a reason, if there's a, you know, a physical limitation or a, some, you know, very legitimate social limitation where a child needs to be taken out of a situation, you know, I can see, you know, the public money going to that child's education, absolutely. And there are situations like that. But that aside, like you said, every dollar that comes out of that, the Racine Unified School District, the cost of operating the Racine Unified School District doesn't change still. So it's just dollar for dollar less per child that's left. Now, the other thing, this is a story I just heard the other day from a resident of Racine whose sibling took their children out of public schools and put them into private schools. You know, whatever her reasoning was, but she went with the vouchers and got part of the school paid for and put them into these private schools. And now it's brought them back to Racine Unified because all of a sudden she said, I thought there was going to be less, you know, problems in this school, but there's so many kids coming out of this school. It's just the same problems that we had at Racine Unified now is the story that I heard the other day. And so just the idea that you're just shuffling people around and losing money to the school district. At the end of the day, keep the money in the school district, do the best good that you can with it, and move forward.
Hmm. I'm sure both of you are well aware of a plan put forth by RAMAC. It was in the, I believe, March 20th Sunday edition of the Racine Journal Times, in which they propose a rather significant, wide sweeping, long-range plan to be created for the city and county of Racine and for the Racine Unified School District. And some of the verbiage that's part of that proposal would be the creation of some kind of long-term plan, and a plan that would have to be followed to the letter no matter what. I mean, even if, you know, various situations and factors might change, that nevertheless, whatever this long-term plan is, that it would be followed, that sometimes that's what you just have to do, make a plan and then stick to it no matter what, no waffling allowed. I wonder what your own personal reaction is to that RAMAC proposal, and in particular, the language in which it was couched. Is it something that you're comfortable with? Do you think it's a helpful thing for the school district, or is it something that you greet with a little more suspicion and maybe even alarm?
I'd say not so much alarm, but the idea of a long-term plan is fantastic. Ask any big business. They have a long-term plan. Every business has the next 5 to 10 years planned out in an ideal fashion, goals to reach and everything else. But, you know, the idea that it can't be changed for any reason, that type of wordage gets people to either jump the gun on some things at the planning stage, or if things aren't planned out at the beginning, what if one of these ancient schools that we have crumbles in that next 10 years? What do? We've now displaced 400 or 500 kids, and we didn't put it in our plan that we might have to build a building sometime along the way. There's unforeseen circumstances that have to be kind of, I guess you'd say, planned for without knowing they're coming. So the idea of a concrete solid plan in place, to me, doesn't seem feasible. However, to have a good plan that gives you a guide and a path to follow for the next 5-10 years, that's, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Goodremote.
Yeah, I would say that a long-term plan is absolutely something that every great organization should have. Because if you don't plan, you really don't go much anywhere. You sometimes just go in circles if you don't have that long-term vision of where you're going to go with that plan. I would have problems, and maybe it's with the interpretation, I'm not quite sure, that following that plan to the letter of the law and that you can't change it, well, I'll have to understand the details of the plan a bit more. But good plans are plans that are constantly reviewed and modified, even the long-term plans. That's what business does, because the real world changes. But I think probably the intent was that we don't keep starting over all the time. I can remember at Modine, where I work, I've had various bosses that come in, and we've changed our procedures here. I'm kind of the head of processes and policies in the company. I can remember in the olden days, a boss would come into an office and throw every file in that office away because they didn't want to do anything that that manager did before that. I think it's important that we as a community come together, put together plans, and then think of things more as a process. What you want to be careful of is not changing your process all the time. But plans, by their very nature, should evolve and change constantly. So I'm not so sure that the interpretation that I heard was quite accurate, that we lock ourselves into a plan and then never change it. I doubt very much that that was the true intent.
A last question about discipline. One of the realities of an entity like the Racine Unified School District is that essentially they are called to provide an education to every young person who comes through the door, including plenty of young people who walk through the door bearing all kinds of mental and emotional difficulties of one kind or another. And in many cases, difficulties which end up being very, very serious discipline issues, disruptions in the classroom, sometimes even eruptions of violence in the classroom. And Racine Unified seems to have a policy at the moment which very severely restricts the kind of response that, for instance, a given teacher is allowed to exert with these kind of students, and even staff and administrators to some extent. If I understand correctly, also, there are very, very, very strict limits on whether such a child can even be touched in such situations. I wonder what your own personal feeling is about Racine Unified's policy when it comes to these kind of students and these kind of situations. Is this a policy that you think is working well, or is it something that needs to be altered in some way? Mr. Gudermo.
I'm not so sure that it's primarily district policy. I think there's state law. Corporal punishment is not allowed in schools these days. You know, as a parent, I guess I spanked my kids once, and I felt so bad that I never did it again. So I'm not so in favor of corporal punishment. But I do know if you're going to raise a child well, that if you love them and pay attention to the difficulties, that you can fix things. And I think that's really the key for us, teachers and parents. Kids that have problems need support. Now, maybe we can do things to take them out of the classroom so that they're not quite so disruptive, and we can provide other opportunities where we can take those children that are hurting and get them the help that they need and get them into an environment that's appropriate. Hopefully such that they can come back and be constructive members of that class. Now, I know that Dr. Galleon shared a three-year plan with us in a recent board meeting. And the three-year plan, in large part, focuses on just what I spoke of. In a couple of our schools right now, we've tried mental health clinics, where we have professionals from Wheaton Franciscan helping us with the children that are misbehaving and identifying what their real issues are. And I heard a heartwarming story from one of the teachers that went through this, that after they identified improvements, they started to work on those improvements in the class, and even the other kids in the class then started to help with that situation. So corporal punishment and just separating the bad kids from the good kids, I don't think is really where we want to go. But I think we need to follow through on Dr. Galleon's three-year plan, which includes the mental health clinics. And there are other things, too. There are special education options for the elementary intensive needs classrooms. There's night school options. There's GED options for some of the kids that are having difficulties in the upper grades. There's the school engagement program. And then there's Turning Point Academy. Now, some of these things will take money, but love doesn't take so much money. And I think that all of us need to focus on those kids that are hurting most and figure out a way to help them.
Mr. Hooper.
Yeah, you're definitely never going to go back to the days where there's a paddle in the principal's office. I remember there was a paddle in my principal's office. We were already past the point where they could use it anymore, but it was still on the wall. I remember that. It was a threat to get, you know, sent there.
Well,
you know,
it was a bigger threat, you know, by your dad yeah, to hear that you
that was
the principal's
but that's,
office, right?
You know, and it's a different world we live in, you know. And there are kids out there who need help. They truly need help. And true, every kid, every child who walks through those doors should be educated and get the same opportunities by all means. And one of the things that I think sometimes winds up hindering that is the amount of time that it takes to get that child help. And especially, and we've heard this a couple of times, if you don't engage that child by the, you know, first, second grade, you might lose them for their entire school career. But some of the programs that are out there and available are almost inaccessible by the time the amount of paperwork and logging and studies are done on this one particular child in a classroom by that teacher or a psychologist or whoever they can possibly bring in to get there. And in the meantime, what often goes unheard, and this is from parents that I've talked to now in the last few weeks and months here, is that it seems like all the rest of the classroom is becomes the ones who start getting left behind. And so that's that double-edged sword where we absolutely need to help that one student or two students who need that extra help. But we need to find a way to do that so that they can get help and then be back as a functioning and successful member of the classroom. I don't think we're definitely not going to disagree on those points. But but as it stands now, whether it's a policy, a state law, you know, we're not going out. No one should be out there, hitting kids or anything like that. But also, we hope we don't get to a point where, you know, kids feel like they're untouchable and use that to take advantage of situations that are out there. So let's get these kids help when they're in the early stages.
Hmm. And on that note, it looks like that's where we will have to leave it. So unless each of you in 30 seconds, no more than that, want to have a quick final statement to our listeners. Mr. Hooper.
Sure. Like I said in the beginning, I'm out here to see that Racine Unified is viable for the near future, the long-term future, and for my kids, my grandkids, and hopefully all the kids of Racine, and to bring in, get Racine back to the point where people want to come to Racine and put their kids in Racine Unified, because it's an amazing place to be. And let's hopefully we get that public opinion changed here in the next, you know, upcoming months and years.
Steve Hooper, Chuck Goodremote, 30 seconds.
30 seconds. I'll go as quick as I can. Teamwork is absolutely the key here. Everybody on the team needs to play their position. I think the board, the administrators, and the educators, the teachers, need to play their positions. The boards are the primary goal, though, and we need to keep this in mind. The board and educators must use the money of the taxpayer in the most efficient way possible to create a learning environment that maximizes the probability of each child in this district reaching their full potential. And I know that if we start pulling in the same direction all together, great things will happen.
Chuck Goodremote and Steve Hooper, they are the candidates for the 5th District of the Racine Unified School District. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here, for being part of today's morning show. This has been fun.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. And a reminder that all of the candidate interviews which have been broadcast on WGTD, either on the morning show or Education Matters, can be found on our website in the respective archives of each program. Our website is WGTD.org. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about